From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Man in the Iron Cage by Lord Halifax. This is a story, a true story, related to Lord Halifax by the daughter of the late Sir W. A. Court. My father and mother, with myself, my sisters, and one of my brothers, went abroad in the late summer of 1865 or 1866. We children were supposed to be learning French, and after we had visited two or three towns in France, our parents decided to make a rather long stay at Lille. Besides finding the teaching particularly good there, we had letters of introduction to some of the leading families in the neighborhood. The first lodging we had was very uncomfortable, and my father soon began to look about for a house. In due course, he discovered a very large and well-built residence, to which we took a great fancy. We were told that we could rent it at what was a remarkably low figure, even for that part of the world. Accordingly, we took the house and moved into it without delay. About 3 weeks later, I went with my mother to the bankers with a letter of credit, which we cashed. As the money was paid in large 6-franc pieces, we could not take it with us, and the banker offered to send his clerk. He asked our address, and when we told him that our house was in the Place du Lion d'Or, he looked surprised. There was, he said, nothing there that would suit our family except, indeed, a house that had been long unlet on account of a revenant that walked about it. This he said quite seriously and in a natural tone of voice. My mother and I laughed, but asked the clerk not to mention the revenant to the servants. And as we were walking home, my mother remarked in fun, "I suppose, Bessie, that it was the ghost which woke us up by walking over our heads. I was sleeping in the same room with her, and on 3 or 4 nights we have been awakened by a low, heavy step overhead, which we thought must be one of the men servants walking about. Our staff consisted of 3 Englishmen, a footman, who had been with us for years, a coachman and a groom, 3 Englishwomen, my mother's maid and housekeeper, my own maid and a nursery maid. All these English servants returned to England with us and never had any idea of leaving us. The other women in the house were French, and so were the butler, the cook, the footman, and Louis, a boy who came home with us." A few days after our visit to the bankers, having been again awakened in the night by steps overhead, my mother asked Cresswell, her maid, who it was who was sleeping in the rooms over us. She replied, "No one, my lady. It is a large, empty garret." A week or 10 days later, Cresswell came in one morning after breakfast and told my mother that most of the French servants were talking of leaving because there was a revenant in the house. "Indeed, my lady," she said, "there is a very strange story about a young man who was heir to this and another house with an estate in the country, and is said to have been confined by an uncle in an iron cage in this house. As he disappeared and was never afterward seen, they supposed that he was killed here. The uncle left the house in a hurry and afterwards sold it to the father of the man from whom you took it. No one has ever remained in it for so long as we have done, and it has been a long time without a tenant." "And do you believe this, Cresswell?" asked my mother. "Well," she said, The iron cage is in the garret over your head, my lady, and I wish you would all come up and see it. At this moment, a friend of ours, an old officer with the Cross of St. Louis, arrived to call on us. We told him the story with some amusement and asked him to accompany us upstairs to see the cage. We found ourselves in a long, large garret with bare brick walls. It was quite empty except that in the further corner there was an iron cage attached to the wall. It recalled to us the kind of cage in which wild beasts are kept, only it was higher. It was about 4 feet square and 8 feet high, and there was an iron ring in the wall at the back to which was attached an old rusty chain with a collar. We really began to feel rather creepy at the idea that any human being could have been kept in such an unpleasant place, and our French friend was as horrified as we were. All the same, we were quite certain that the footsteps we had heard in the night were part of a plan to keep the house untenanted, and we were rather uncomfortable at the thought that there was a private way in of which we knew nothing. We therefore decided to look about us for something else, but to stay in our present quarters until we were successful in finding it. About 10 days after our visit to the garret, Cresswell came to dress my mother in the morning, looking so pale and ill that we asked her what was the matter. "Indeed, my lady," she said, "we have been frightened to death. Neither Mrs. Marsh, which was my maid, nor I can sleep again in the room we are now in." "Well," said my mother, "you may come and sleep in the little spare room next to ours. But what has frightened you?" "Someone, my lady," she said, "went through our room last night. We both saw the figure, but hid under the bedclothes and lay in a dreadful fright till the morning." I burst out laughing, but Cresswell began to cry, and when I saw that she was really upset, I tried to comfort her. I told her we had heard of a very good house and would soon move into it. Meanwhile, they could sleep in the room next to ours. The room in which they had been so frightened had a door recessed from the first landing on a very wide staircase, leading to the passage onto which the best rooms opened. The door of my mother's room faced the staircase. In Cresswell's old room there was a second door which led to the back stairs, making it a kind of passage. A few nights after the change of rooms, my mother asked Charles and me to fetch from her bedroom her long embroidery frame, so that she might get her work ready for the morning. Although it was after supper and quite dark, we did not take a candle, as there was a lamp at the bottom of the staircase, and we thought we could find the frame by leaving open the door of my mother's room. When we reached the foot of the stairs, we saw a tall, thin figure in a powdering gown and wearing hair down the back going up the stairs in front of us. We both thought it was Hannah and called out, "It won't do, Hannah. You can't frighten us." At these figures, the figure turned into the recess, and when in passing it, we saw nobody there. We concluded that she had gone through Cresswell's old room and down the back staircase. When we returned with the frame, we told my mother of Hannah's trick. She said, "That is very odd. Before you came in from your walk, Hannah went to bed with a headache." We went at once to Hannah's room, where we found Alice at work, and she told us that Hannah had been sound asleep for more than an hour. A little later, on our way to bed, we saw Cresswell. When we told her of our mistake, she turned quite white and exclaimed, "That is exactly the figure we saw." About this time, my brother Harry came to spend 10 days with us. He was sleeping up another staircase at the far end of the house, and one morning, when he came down to breakfast, he asked my mother quite angrily if she had thought he was drunk the night before and could not put out his candle, since she had sent some of those French rascals to watch him. He added, "I jumped up and opened my door, and by the moon through the skylight I saw a fellow in his loose gown at the bottom of the stairs. If I had had anything on, I would have been after him and taught him to come spying on me." My mother assured him that she had not sent anyone. That very day we had arranged to take a delightful house with a charming garden belonging to a nobleman who was going to Italy for a few years. And even before we moved in, a Mr. and Mrs. Atkins and their son, who lived 3 or 4 miles from Lille, came on horseback to call on us. We told them how frightened our servants had been and how disagreeable it was to be in a house which a person might enter unknown to us. We told them that no one now would sleep in the room in which Cresswell and my maid had seen the revenant. Mrs. Atkins laughed and said that with my mother's permission she would much like to sleep there, and that with her terrier to keep her company she would not be in the least afraid. On my mother replying that she had no objection, Mr. Atkins rode home with a boy to fetch Mrs. Atkins' things before the gates were shut. In the morning, Mrs. Atkins looked ill and did not appear to have slept much. When we asked her if she had been frightened, she declared that she had been roused from a sound sleep by someone moving about her room. The dog did not stir, although he generally flew at an intruder, but by the lamp in the chimney she distinctly saw a figure. She said that she had tried to set the dog at it, but our belief was that she was much too frightened, and we were greatly entertained when Mr. Atkins arrived to take her home, and to her indignation said in a droll way, "Perhaps she dreamt it all." After they had gone, my mother said, as she had often done, "I cannot for an instant fancy it is a ghost, but I most sincerely hope I shall get out of the house without seeing what seems to frighten people so much. I know that to see any person in my room at night would alarm me dreadfully." 3 days before our move into the new house, I had been for a long ride and went to bed tired. It was hot, and the curtains of our bed were undrawn on my side and at the foot. I was sleeping soundly when I was awakened, though by what I could not say. We were so accustomed to the footsteps overhead that by this time they never awakened either my mother or myself. We kept a light always burning in the room, and by it I saw a tall, thin figure in a long gown. One arm rested upon the chest of drawers that stood between the window and the door. The face was turned towards me. It was long and thin and pale, the face of a young man with a melancholy look on it, which I shall never forget. I was certainly very frightened, but my worst fear was that my mother would wake. Fortunately, she seemed to be in a sound sleep. At the moment, the clock on the stairs struck 4, and I lay for nearly an hour before daring to look again towards the chest of drawers. When at last I did so, I could see nothing, though I never heard the door opened or shut, or any other noise. I did not close my eyes for the rest of the night, and when Cresswell came as usual, I called out, "I need not get up to let you in, for you must have forgotten to put the key upon the chest of drawers last night." She said she had not forgotten, and to my surprise, when I got up, I found the key in the usual place. When I told my mother, she was most grateful that I had not awakened her, and insisted that we should not run the risk of spending another night in the house. So directly we had our breakfast, and we set about moving all our things so that we were able to sleep in our new quarters. Before we left, Cresswell and I examined every part of our room, but without discovering any secret way of entering. In the disturbances that followed in France, and various troubles of our own, we almost forgot about our revenant. On one winter evening, however, my mother made me tell the story. Later on, Lord Halifax received a follow-up to the story from another source by the name of Reverend S. Baring Gould, which read, "Dear Sir, the November number of the Cornhill Magazine has only lately come to my hands. I find your story of the man in the iron cage particularly interesting because of an experience I had at the Hotel du Lion d'Or at Lille some 30 years ago. As I think this may interest you, I venture to write you an account of it. In May 1887, I was traveling with two friends from Boulogne to Brussels. One of my friends, an aged lady, unaccustomed to long railway journeys, became so tired that her sister decided it would be best to stop short at Lille and spend the night there. We arrived towards evening. Knowing nothing of the place and intending to go on next morning, we asked for the hotel nearest the station, which proved to be an old-fashioned, unpretentious hostelry, the Hotel du Lion d'Or. We were soon settled in a comfortable suite of rooms on the first floor. The larger bedroom occupied by my friends had two doors, one opening on the landing to the right of the staircase, the other into a small, narrow anteroom or dressing room, of which the opposite door communicated with my room. At first we thought this was the only entrance to my bedroom, but on examination we found a second door at the further end of my room. This, the landlord said, was naturally kept locked, and he did not seem disposed to open it. My friend, however, insisted on the door being unlocked and the key left in our possession. It opened into a small recess off the landing, and as far as I can remember, about opposite to the head of the stairs. This recess appeared to be used as a housemaid's closet, for it was full of pails and brooms, which we thought explained our host's objection to unlocking the door. My friends retired very early to rest, encouraged by the chambermaid's assurance that they would have a quiet night as they were the only occupants of that floor. Indeed, we seemed to be the only guests in the hotel, a fact which did not surprise us as it was early in the season. Since I did not feel at all tired, after wishing my friend good night, I sat down in my room to write some letters home. So engrossed was I in this occupation that the time slipped away quickly, and it must have been between 11 and 12 o'clock when I became aware that although the house had long been perfectly quiet, someone was apparently walking up and down in a rather stealthy fashion just outside the door which opened into the recess. The slow dragging steps mentioned in your story exactly describes the sound I heard. I paid little heed to it, thinking that the steps were those of some belated servant. Suddenly there was a knock at the outer door of my room, and the younger of my friends, whom I had thought asleep hours before, looked in, anxiously asking if anything was the matter, as she had been awakened by hearing me, as she supposed, walking up and down my room. I assured her that I had not stirred from my chair, and that I too had been surprised at hearing the same noise which seemed to come from outside my door on the landing. We opened this door, and with a light examined the recess and then the landing, but all was perfectly still and no one was to be seen. Concluding that all of the footsteps seemed to have been so near, the sound must really have proceeded from an upper story, we relocked the door. My friend returned to her room and I went to bed, still hearing from time to time, until I fell asleep, the stealthy dragging step. We left Lille by an early train next day, and I thought little more of this occurrence. It did not, however, completely pass from my mind, as I mentioned it in recounting my travels on my return home about 2 months later. Very likely I should not have given it another thought, had it not happened that a friend of my mother's, who knew her to be interested in ghost stories, gave her a manuscript account, almost exactly similar to yours, of a haunted house in the Place du Lion d'Or at Lille. It then struck me that probably this was the very house in which I had spent the night, and that the footsteps I had heard were not those of any living denizen of the hotel. I have given you this account thinking that it may help you identify the house to which your sad story is attached.